to supply new torch ships for the corporations competing in the belt. Torch ships armed with powerful lasers. Warships built of diamond hulls constructed by nanomachines. They're killing each other out in the belt, Stavanger knew. He also knew that sooner or later, one way or the other, the war would come to Cellini. What he didn't know was how to prevent it, how to stop the fighting. How many orders for ships do you have? He asked the factory manager. Six, she replied. Three from Astro and three from HSS. She hesitated a beat, then added, Funny how the orders always come paired up. We never make a ship for one of the corporations without making a ship for the other at the same time. That had been Stavanger's doing. He had exerted every gram of influence he possessed to keep both Humphreys and Pancho from outproducing the other. If they want to fight, Stavanger had reasoned, it's up to us to keep the competition equal. As soon as one of them gets the upper hand, they'll be able to dictate the prices for raw materials to us. Cellini will have to pay whatever the winner asks for its natural resources. Whoever wins this war in the belt will win control of Cellini as well. That, Stavanger was determined, would not be allowed to happen. To the factory manager he asked, as casually as he could manage, Suppose a third party started ordering spacecraft. Could you supply them on the same schedule you're working now? He couldn't see her face through the visor of her hard-shell helmet, but he could sense her nodding. Sure. We'd have to set up another facility, but that's easy to do. Just pour another concrete pad and roof it over. The nanos do all the real work. Stavanger nodded. I see. Curiosity got the better of the manager. But who'd be ordering more ships? Who'd this third party be? With a soft shrug, he replied, Oh, I don't know. Maybe Cellini. The manager could not have been more surprised if Stavanger had actually turned a handspring there on the factory floor.
Less than 20 kilometers from the new lunar factory, Lars Fuchs was passing through customs at Cellini's Armstrong spaceport. He had come to the moon by a circuitous route, leaving the belt weeks earlier to return to his native Switzerland, using the passport that Pancho had sent him through Big George. Although exiled from Ceres and persona non grata at Cellini, neither Switzerland nor any other nation of Earth had outlawed Fuchs. Customs officials at the spaceport in Milan had subjected him to a quick but thorough medical examination, including a full body scan and a blood sample to make certain he did not bear nanomachines. Thus, Lars Fuchs, citizen of Switzerland, returned to his native land. He had spent weeks working out in a centrifuge he'd built aboard Nautilus. But still, the heavy gravity of Earth made him feel tired, depressed. Even worse was the sight of the sprawling tent city that he glimpsed outside of Milan from the high-speed train as it raced toward the Alps. From the city's newly walled and guarded borders past Brescia and all the way to the shores of Lake Garda, he could see nothing but the shacks and shanties of the homeless, the dispossessed, the haunted, hopeless victims of the greenhouse warming. After all these years, Fuchs thought, staring through the train window, they still live like animals. Then he caught his first glimpse of the Alps, bare rock, stark and barren as the moon. Where's the snow? He asked himself, knowing that it was gone, perhaps for centuries, perhaps forever. His world, the world he had known, was gone also. He didn't realize how much he had loved it, how much he missed it, until he realized that he would never see it again. As the train plunged into the tunnel at the Brenner Pass, Fuchs stared at his own grim reflection in the window. He looked away, squeezed his eyes shut, and determined to stop thinking about the past. Only the future. Think only of the day when you will kill Martin Humphreys. To do that, he had to return to Cellini. And to accomplish that, he had to change his identity. Pancho thought she was saving Fuchs's life, protecting the man she had known since he'd first left Earth as an eager graduate student more than a decade earlier. She had provided Fuchs with a new identity and enough money to live comfortably for a few years. At his insistence, she had also done as much for the 9 men and women of his crew. Nautilus was parked in a sun-circling orbit deep in the belt, still disguised to resemble a smallish asteroid. "It will be waiting for me when I finish my business with Humphreys," Fuchs thought. He knew what that business was, what it had to be. "Pancho hasn't brought me to Earth merely out of friendship. She wants me to get back to Cellini. She can't trust any communications link to say it in so many words, but her intention is clear. She wants me to kill Humphreys. She knows that's what I want to do, and she's willing to help me do it. It would be a great help to her, of course, but it will be a joy to me. Even if it cost my own life, I will snuff out Humphreys." His thirst for vengeance kindled him for the remainder of his train ride to Bern. But once in his native Bern, he became sad and dispirited, depressed at how the old city had become so shabby, so filled with aimless, homeless men and women, even children, wandering the streets, begging for handouts when the police weren't looking. Fuchs was shocked that the streets were littered with trash. The city that had once sparkled was now grimy, obviously decaying. And at night, the streets could even be dangerous, he was warned by the weary-eyed concierge at his hotel. A week was more than enough for him. Fuchs used the identity Pancho had provided for him to book passage back to Cellini. He rented a modest suite for himself at the Hotel Luna, with an expense account to be paid by Astro Corporation. "Closer to Humphreys," he told himself. "Within arm's reach, almost. Close enough to kill. But you must be patient," he thought. "You must be careful. Humphreys is surrounded by guards and other employees. Pancho can't openly help me to reach him. She can't allow herself to be seen as aiding an assassin. I'll have to act alone. I'll have to get through to Humphreys on my own. I don't know how, not yet. But I will do it, or die in the trying." He had to disguise his appearance, of course. Lifts in his shoes made him slightly taller. Rigid Spartan dieting had slimmed him somewhat, but no fasting could reduce his barrel chest or thickly muscled limbs. He had grown a thick black beard and wore molecule-thin contact lenses that Astro's people had clandestinely sent him. They altered his retinal pattern enough to fool a computer's simple comparison programming. Still, Fuchs could not help sweating nervously as he shuffled through the line leading to the customs inspection booth at Cellini's Armstrong spaceport. He had taken a mild tranquilizer, but it didn't seem to be helping to calm his growing apprehension. When he came to the inspection station, the computer's synthesized German sounded slightly strange to him, until he realized the machine was not programmed to speak in his own Swiss dialect. He answered its questions as briefly as he could, knowing that the system did not have the voice print of Lars Fuchs in its memory, yet still worried that somehow it might. It didn't. He followed instructions and looked into the retinal scanner for the required 5 seconds, slowly counting them off in silence. The automated systems built into the archway directly in front of the inspector's booth scanned his one travel bag and his body without a problem. Fuchs had nothing with him or on him that would trigger an alarm. The human inspector sitting in the booth behind the automated machinery looked bored, his thin smile forced. Fuchs handed him his falsified identity chip, and the inspector slipped it into his desk top.
"Karl Manstein?"
"Ja," Fuchs answered. The inspector asked, "Purpose of your visit?" in standard English. The booth's synthesized computer voice translated his words into German. "Vacation." For a heart-stopping moment, the inspector studied his screen display, his eyes narrowing. Then he popped Fuchs's thumbnail-sized chip out of his computer and slid it over the countertop to him. "Welcome to Selene, Herr Manstein,"